Hey, welcome back to the Ramble Room. Once again, I'm Ken. I'm here with you, and I'm flying solo tonight. Well, not quite solo. Everybody's off watching the grandkids play baseball, but it was kind of miserable, so I came up with another excuse. I am joined tonight by Dr. Tom Kelly. If you're on Facebook and follow any of the stuff that we do, you might be familiar with him. But in the meantime, Tom, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you come from, all that good stuff.
Okay. Hi, Ken. First, thanks for having me in here. This is a great setup.
Absolutely.
This could be a lot of fun. All right. Yeah, some of you may have seen me post on some of your Ken's things here about politics or current happenings. You'll see me come up. I'm Darth Vader on Facebook. That's my son and I in that picture. So a little bit about who I am. I am Dr. Thomas Kelly of American Military University. I go by Tom.
I appreciate that.
I can't stand, call me a doctor. I can't stand
people,
that.
People come out and say, my name is Dr. So, no, doctor's your title.
Oh, for crying. Yeah. People come up now, Mr. Kelly. No, Dr. Kelly. I can never stand that back when I was only had an MA. So I'm a former public school teacher. I used to teach social studies. I used to teach history. I used to teach special education. And I always said, teaching special education, that if I ever had a kid with special needs, I would want one with Down syndrome. Well, God was listening, and I have an 8-year-old son with Down syndrome now. I'm married. I have 6 children. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. You'll probably hear that in my voice sometimes when I'm speaking. If I get riffing, you might hear a real high hard A coming out of me.
I just did.
I moved to Colorado about 11 years ago, and then Colorado became Illinois with mountains, and I fled to Wyoming, and I'm planting my flag here, sir. I mean, there's nowhere left to go.
Well, I got to tell you, when I first met you and I heard where you were from, my gut reaction was, oh, hell.
Oh, no. That's a long-haired professor from Colorado. Yeah, get your bong out of here, buddy.
You said, if I remember right, you said somebody that was living up here kind of helped recruit you to the area?
One of my fellow coworkers. I'm not going to say his name just in case. I don't know if he wants his name mentioned at all. But he is a retired sniper from the Army Rangers. And he was living in Colorado Springs like you were.
I see why you don't mention his name.
Yeah. Okay. And he said, listen, I can't take what's happening in Colorado. And I heard what you've had to say. And he's like, come on, check out Sheridan, Wyoming. You might fit in. Don't tell anyone else. And I came out here and...
ran for city council.
I did. I ran for city council and lost. Which was not all that surprising because I became known as the long-haired professor from Colorado. My wife drives a purple van, and some people kind of looked at me and said, didn't understand that the ponytail is that I'm a Harley biker. I'm not a hippie. As far as running for city council, when I got here, I right away started hearing some of the same ideas that had ruined Chicago, had ruined Northern Colorado and Denver. And I was hearing them here in Sheridan, and I was like, oh, no. I've got to fight this time. So what could I do? I got myself on the planning commission. I ran for city council. I failed. This time around, I think I'm going to run for the school board because of my credentials.
Good job, yeah.
Yeah, in addition to having a master's in political science, I have a master's in secondary education. I'm a former public school teacher. I have 5 kids currently in the public schools. And right now I'm the department head of political science at American Military University. So I've got the credentials to run for it. And I think probably I could do more for the future of the town if I had my hand on the scale of what was going on in the classroom, being a former teacher, having kids in the school, and being concerned about some of the just insane ideas that are being written into law in Illinois and Colorado, it is mandatory, some of the garbage they want to teach kids now. Meanwhile, the kids literally can't spell things.
And we here in Wyoming would like to think, oh, this is a conservative place. That's not going to happen here. You know, we're safe. And all this stuff, I use the word stuff very carefully. All this stuff is creeping in at a rate that is staggering, even here.
Yeah, I'll keep it family friendly too, because, you know, we bikers. Some of the stuff that you're talking about, when I first got here in 2019 and I started talking about the things I saw that I was concerned about, some people in Sheridan looked at me like I had two heads, like, are you crazy? That might happen in Colorado, but not here. And I don't know how many of your listeners have seen the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers movie, the black and white one. And I realized later I sounded like the guy at the end of that movie screaming, they're coming, the pod people are coming. And people looked at me like I was nuts. And then after I lost for city council, it was a year and a half later, people were like, oh, my God, you were right. Oh, you should have won. Oh, no. And what can you do?
One of the reasons that I have invited Tom to the show was his love of history, and we'll get into that eventually. But so we've been talking for some time about it. He needs to come on the show. He's kind of a kick to listen to. He's an eloquent speaker, as you can tell. And I wanted to get him on here and talk about some things about history. As you know, we've done several shows on that. And then along comes this incident with Anthony Bouchard, and I came up with a response to that, which was aired a few days ago. And that generated quite a bit of response, quite a bit of talk, some back and forth on Facebook pages and elsewhere, some email stuff going back and forth. And one of the things that Tom came up and said was he doesn't think that Anthony Bouchard stands a chance. Well, obviously, the people who are advocates of his didn't like that. And Tom basically just said, well, let me get on the Ramble Room and try to explain what I'm talking about. So here's your opportunity.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Right, right. I came on there and I said, this is, he's toast. His campaign is, it's a zombie campaign. It's still walking, but it's dead walking. And that of course got a bit of a response from supporters that, let's just say it was a little bit negative, maybe some inferences made about my character or my ulterior motives. And I'm a political scientist. I study politics. I study it as objectively as I possibly can. And to put it as bluntly as I can, to have impregnated literally a minor, a child, when you are a legal adult is a campaign killer. It's something the opposition will run wild with if they can. Liz Cheney is a professional politician. She has got she's a career politician. She's got a professional staff, they consultants, people, and that's all they do is look for this type of thing to get a wedge, to cause negative press. And we're looking at something like this with Mr. Bouchard. I'm not going to comment on the man's character. I've never met him. I don't know him. I understand how such things could be forgivable. I understand he did the honorable things in response to what went wrong for him. There's no ill will towards this man at all. And if it came down to Bouchard versus Cheney, I'm voting for Bouchard. My point was from the objective perspective that he's already doing damage control this early in the campaign. And that can make money and support start flowing elsewhere. There's the initial circle the wagons effect, where his hardcore supporters might be like, you know, we've got to get money in. We've got to show that we still support him. But that can fade. And I don't see somebody who's a professional career politician like Liz Cheney ever saying, well, look at this guy. Look what he did. He had sex with a child. Oh, that's so disgusting. She will feign the high road, I'm predicting.
Feign, exactly.
Exactly.
That was the essence. If you didn't listen to my comments, that was the essence of it. I went back to John chapter 8, talked about the woman caught in adultery, and all of the pretend angst of the people of Senator Bouchard's detractors. And I was trying to point a finger at them and just say, don't even pretend. You know, if you put 100 men in the room and said, how many of you when you were 18 did something stupid? every hand would have to go up. They wouldn't all necessarily be the same things, but nobody wants to go back to there. So anyway, I've interrupted you enough, Tom.
No, that's all right. It's a conversation. It's not a monologue rant by me, which, thank you, you won't let it turn into. But I could see a professional politician with the handlers and friends in the media. She wouldn't say anything herself. She would let the press corps do it. She would let people who are favorable to her campaign say, what do you have to say about the sex scandal of candidate Bouchard? And then she'll say, we all have made mistakes. And she would probably come across as defending him and his character. And I'm sure he wants what's best and he did the right thing. But I don't know enough about it. But let's remain focused on the issues at hand for the people of Virginia. I'm sorry, Wyoming. And then she would let the press do the work for her, keep bringing that up and hammering him. So that's just where I was coming from, is that is just political gold for opposition, and they are going to cash it in.
So we were working on this show about sexual scandals because there have been a lot of those over the years. It always seems to be one of those ace in the holes. And to me, it just tells me there are a lot of people with a lot of skeletons in the closet. It also tells me there are probably a lot of good people out there, and you might want to weigh on this, there are probably a lot of good people out there who have some sort of something in their background that makes them afraid to step up and do the right thing and run for office because they're afraid that somebody somewhere might dig this thing up and blow back up in their face. And I guess the old expression, conscience makes cowards of us all. So while we stand around and selfishly worry about somebody might dig something up that I'm ashamed of, we allow the left and the communists and the socialists to run roughshod over our country. And it's time for a lot of us who have a little bit of a backbone to stand up and just say, I don't really care. I'm going to go do what's right.
Well, there you go. The political climate has come to the point where people of good character, even if we don't fear our background coming up, don't want to run for office because the political meat grinder, I mean, it's Satan's arena. When we talk about we need good God-fearing people in office, I'm just like, you know what? That's, yeah, you're talking to the wrong club in politics. It is geared towards self-serving narcissists to run for office. When people say Donald Trump was a narcissist, of course he was. So was Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and everybody else running for president. What kind of personality wants that type of power? What type of personality will put their wife and children and family and friends all on the line for that meat grinder of a press? Who wants to be put through the wood chipper just so they can say they have that power? They're all narcissists. Some just hide it better than others. And that's why so many of us love Trump, was because, yeah, he was egotistical and he wasn't afraid to say it. Yeah, I'm the best. You know? And they all think this too. They know I'm the best.
Everybody says so.
And you know, I'm not going to make any comments about Trump's character, other than the fact that whenever he was called a narcissist, that is the prototypical type of person who runs for office now. So you're talking about good people running for office. I could talk about my own experience. I have 6 children. One's an adult now. I have a grandchild. I have a child who's a cancer survivor. I have a child with ADHD. I have one who's on the autistic spectrum. I have one who has Down syndrome. My family's a special ed class. You know, God does have a sense of humor. I was a special ed teacher.
Makes a great family photo.
I don't know. Maybe just looked at me and just said, wow, he would be great with kids like this. You know, he already is. So you've been designed for this. So here's your family. So I have kids who have their own challenges and their own issues. And do they really need Sheridan Media or the Sheridan Press saying nasty things about their dad, which might be true, might be half true, might be rumor from anonymous sources, whatever it is. And that can be harrowing, where you're like, I'm not going to put my family through that. And it was my wife, Gina, who was saying, like, you are a natural leader. You're smart. You're strong. You've got great moral fiber. The world needs people like you to step up and lead. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of an introvert. And she's like, you have to get over that. You have to get over that and don't hide behind your kids anymore. So thus, my wife had a lot to do with the Thomas Kelly for City Council signs around town, because she's like, you've got to do something. God doesn't give you talents to sit around and just complain on Facebook.
Right. By the way, at 6'9", I don't see you effectively hiding behind your children. Just saying.
Well, my son is already 6'6".
Hey. Yep. Now, your wife Gina is no 5'4".
No, she's about 5'11", yeah. 6 feet tall. Yeah. I don't know. I'm
always impressed when I'm around people I can look up to. So.
Yeah.
You've never heard that before, have you?
Yeah, there we go. Thank you for that rim shot. I don't have control of the rim shot over here, so I did the best I could.
Yeah.
I'm 6'9". I'm not worried about me. I'm working on my second degree black belt in martial arts, and I can take the criticisms. I can take the false accusations. I just get worried about, like, you know, my 13-year-old daughter going to school and people saying, my dad says your dad is, expletive. And I don't want my kids to have to go through that. But on the other hand, that does become an excuse. But the community of Sheridan is fantastic. And
it
generally
is.
People here are supportive. They're friendly. And quite often, I joked about this when I was running for city council, that when I was in Illinois, I'm a right-wing nut. I'm a Nazi. I'm crazy fascist with my crazy thoughts about you should be allowed to own a gun. Things like that.
And only that, one?
a gun. Yeah. In Illinois, you have to get an ID simply to buy bullets. It's called the firearm owner's identification. And they charge you money and they wait and you make months on end to get it. And I can't believe people live like that. So then I moved to Colorado. And it's a little further right, believe it or not. You know, they used to be called the Purple State. It's blue now, but it's not like Illinois, which is just... Let's just forget about Illinois.
Well, Wyoming's purple. Just saying.
Well, you throw in Teton County, yeah. And I know Cheyenne's marginal lately with Colorado bleeding in. But then I get in Colorado and I case the Republican Party. I was a Republican. I was a registered Republican in Illinois. And I left and I joined the Libertarian Party because the Republican Party of Illinois was becoming pro-choice, gun control, all sorts of things that I just couldn't stand for. I didn't see the point of being an independent, so I joined the Libertarian Party. I moved out to Colorado. I actually ran at one time as a Libertarian. They had recruited me and asked me to run. And of course, you know, I lost because Libertarians never really win. But the Republican Party of Colorado was still too far to the left of me. I am not a right winger. That is generally me, the more of the libertarian type. I've got a Christian foundation, but I tend to step back and be like, as long as people aren't hurting one another, it's really none of my business. And then I moved to Wyoming. And after being like a crazy right wing Nazi in Illinois, I get to Wyoming. And I'm like, geez, I'm kind of a moderate in the Republican Party out here. So I felt right at home. You know, we've got rhinos to the left of me and we've got hardcore conservatives to the right of me, but it found a sweet spot in the area. So when I meet the people of Sheridan, I get a lot of support, a lot of positive feedback, and I get a lot of people who are like, oh man, I didn't make the connection. You're the long-haired professor from Colorado. Oh, yes. I'm like, I know what you were thinking. Like, you got to run again. Okay. Maybe I will. But like you were saying about what goes on with politics in general, it's ugly. You see it on Facebook. You see the canceling. You see people now in the mainstream press. You know, we're just talking about Sheridan and Wyoming. Wyoming is just considered like a right-wing dictatorship by the national press. And we've got a governor that we look at and we say, hey, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Why are you sitting around waiting to see what Kristi Noem of South Dakota does before you make a decision?
Exactly. I, as everybody knows that listens here, I am avidly pro-gun. I am avidly anti-abortion. There are things that Tom and I may not agree on, but we can sit down, have a beer together, enjoy each other's company, find a lot of common ground, and a way to move, here we're going to say it, a way to move forward. We had a discussion in this last podcast about if you're standing on the edge of a cliff, my wife said, maybe forward isn't the way to go.
Oh, yeah. Let's have a fourth stimulus that is over the cliff.
Yeah. So I have really appreciated getting to know Tom a little bit and hope to get to know him a lot better. He definitely has an interest in podcasting, and I think he has an aptitude for us. If you think so, please comment. There are a lot of things that we're working on that I'm not at liberty to discuss. Other podcasts, perhaps a YouTube channel, perhaps a radio show, a number of different things that are in the works. And Tom, I hope that you'll be a part of that. And one of the reasons I hope you'll be a part of it is your background in history. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. I've heard several things that you have said, your takes on history and how that affects where we're at today. I really look forward to working with you and just being informative to people who may not remember what they were taught in school, or more likely than not, were never taught anything in school. So if you would just take a minute, give us two or three incidents in history that you think were pivotal in the shaping of America. And this is kind of impromptu. I see him looking over there. The gears are spinning. Two or three instances in America that were pivotal in how we got where we're at now. They could be back in the formation. They could be relatively recent. And let's talk about what we would do in a further show.
Well, historically, I'm going to skip over the American Revolution. Sometimes the significance of the Civil War is overlooked. Is that before the Civil War, the United States was kind of like the European Union. It was a connection of independent states that were unified underneath a common currency and a common national defense. Then the Civil War happened, and it's remembered in history as a war to stop slavery. But what it also did to transform the United States was make it more of a unitary country. Now, we still have what we call a federal system, but that really established the federal government as dominant. And after that, we get the income tax, we get FDR and the New Deal, and an acceptance that while federal supremacy is in the Constitution, the whole idea was only a federal supremacy, that if a law that the federal government passes is in conflict with the state law, well, then the federal law takes precedent. But there was also the Bill of Rights that was supposed to limit, particularly the Forgotten Amendment, number 10.
Amen.
What the federal government was supposed to do. And it said, if it's not written in the Constitution, then we can't do it. So one of the, I would say the next part, number two, would be the acceptance of the Commerce Clause for just about anything the federal government wants to do, whether it's Social Security, it's health care, stimulus plans for everybody, regulation of people growing wheat, the Filburn case, on their own property. Everything fell underneath the umbrella of that. But I would go to a third one, that we are still seeing the effects of how damaging it was, and that's the COVID pandemic. It's not even history yet. It's not even over yet. But this will go down in history books as the time when half the country went running to the power of the state saying, please save us. We don't want to be free anymore. We want to feel safe. And I say feel safe because the government cannot make you safe. People will vote for the government to make them feel safe. Whether it's somebody on the right who wants to feel safe from illegal aliens coming across the border, or it's somebody who wants to feel safe from a virus, eventually we have professional politicians in charge, and you are your own first responder, and it's the American people, and it is our country. It's our responsibility to make ourselves safe, to make our families safe. So, but we now have... We've got a federal government on the march towards an authoritarian regime that includes policing of speech, federal takeovers of energy, of healthcare, of higher education, and we've got half the country cheering them on. We don't want liberty. And the don't tread on the Gadsden flag. Yes. I've got that hanging in my garage. And now we get told anything related to freedom is not only selfish, it's not only chaotic. Freedom is white supremacy.
Yeah.
And if a black woman says, I like freedom, well, you have internalized white supremacy, and the discussion is over. So what we've seen with the movement around COVID, with the collusion of social media to shut up voices like you and me, the demanding, a lot of people said, how can Americans sit by and let the government do this? I'm like, half the country wants this. They want mandatory vaccines. They want vaccine passports. They want universal health care, which is basically, you know, Medicaid for all, or Medicare for all.
You can say socialism up here. It's a dirty word, but you can say it.
You know, that's a whole different show about how everybody has tried to redefine what socialism is. They point to capitalist countries like Sweden who don't even have a minimum wage and say, oh, that's socialism and it works and it'll work this time over here. It's like, no. Yeah. Venezuela is socialism.
Yes.
Cuba is socialism. North Korea said, well, no, that's communism. And this is the last thing I'll say because you got me rolling and I'll never shut up.
You will be back.
But yeah, I just say that communism has never existed in the world, because if anyone's ever actually read the Communist Manifesto, the ultimate goal of communism was no government. It was voluntary cooperation after the stage of socialism, but it never happens. So we get an increasingly totalitarian state trying to force everybody into the system, and you get stuck in these nightmarish tyrannies like North Korea, and it always goes that route. And when I hear Americans say, well, we'll get it right this time, socialism is the walking dead of ideologies. I don't know how many times it gets shot dead in the real world, and it just gets up and meanders into the nearest university classroom.
Zombie politics.
All right, now you got me ranting. I'll stop.
No, I appreciate it. We need to have you back on a regular basis, Tom. I very much enjoyed this. I'd like to explore many of the things that you brought up. And if any of you have heard things in this that you want to hear more about, you let us know.
And we didn't even get into the I Support Palestine.
No, that picture.
That's a whole different show.
Oh, that is a different show. Anyway, Tom, I really appreciate you being here. It's been a great show, and I look forward to many more.
We will. Thanks, Ken. That was fun.
You bet.